And so I think having that balanced approach has kind of come along at the same time that I think cities are valuing equity and diversity and inclusion. You know, more elected officials are kind of tasked with that and charged with, you know, really trying to bring that to their engagement process. And so for us, that just means we got to have a lot of different tools so that we can kind of apply them to each group as it makes sense.
Helping community leaders grow financially resilient, resource-conscious, and people-friendly cities is the Go Cultivate podcast, brought to you by Verdunity.
Hey, everybody. You are listening to the Go Cultivate podcast. I'm Verdunity founder and CEO Kevin Shepherd, and it's conference season. And AJ is currently on the road to the Texas APA conference in El Paso as I'm recording this. So I'm going to be flying solo today for our intro outro. I'm actually headed out tomorrow to El Paso to join AJ and Karina from our team. I think this is actually going to come out after the conference. So me asking you to come swing by our booth and chat with us will be a little bit after the fact. But it's been a busy conference season for us. We've been out and about presenting and have some more coming up in November and I think even into December. So if you're not on our email list and getting some of those notifications, you can jump over to our website at verdunity.com. And there's a way on there to subscribe to our newsletter and get more updates on where we are and what we're doing. One other quick note before I get into this episode, we're growing here at Verdunity. We're looking to hire a couple of positions. We've got an open position for a community planner. We've got one for a civil EIT engineer to help out with our incremental development site dev work, and then also municipal infrastructure work, design work that we do. And then we have a position that we're not exactly sure what we're looking for with this one, but we're calling it a budget data analyst. Someone that is familiar with municipal finance and budgeting, but is really passionate about the opportunities to connect long-range planning, development, infrastructure decisions to budgeting in a more intentional way, whether that be spreadsheets and database and that kind of analytics, or doing a little more of our GIS-based fiscal analysis work that we do. So we're kind of a little more open with what we're looking for there, just kind of looking for somebody that brings the right skill sets and kind of a hybrid between a budget and a planner type person there. But if you're, we've got a lot of great projects going. We're crazy busy and we'd love to be able to pursue more stuff and help more communities. So if you're interested in any of those positions, or even if you're someone that doesn't fit one of those exactly, but is interested in what we do and would like to chat with us about what you think you could bring to our team and our clients, you can find more about those positions if you go to verdunity.com/careers, and you can see there how to a little more info on each position and how to apply. It's pretty simple. You send us an email. Send an email to hireme@verdunity.com with your resume, some examples of work products if you have them, and I always like to see we always like to see a little blurb about who you are and why you think your personal experiences and abilities would be a good fit with our team here. So check that out if you have a chance. We'd love to talk with you, and need to fill some spots. So on to today's episode. Today I talk with Ryan Short. Ryan is the founder and CEO of Civic Brand. They're a design and engagement firm that specializes in community visioning, branding, engagement, and placemaking that creates more lovable places. Ryan and I met a few years ago through our mutual interest in Strong Towns and CNU. We're actually currently working with he and his team on a couple of comprehensive plan projects here in Texas. Ryan and his guys, they work with communities all over the country. They share a lot of the same values and philosophies that we have here at Verdunity. Especially the importance of having a strong community identity, kind of a connected brand for your community that can transcend different departments or different entities, like maybe your chamber or EDC, along with your city. But you know, having that identity and brand, having shared goals and desired outcomes across the community, and then especially an engagement program that's designed intentionally to reach different audiences in different locations through different ways, whether that's online, in person, and also in a consistent, ongoing manner. So we get into this a little more in the interview about Ryan's thoughts on engagement and how both of our groups are kind of working to improve the engagement process and kind of climb up the food chain to create that culture and that alignment through the community. Ryan also has his own podcast called Eyes on the Street. And so what we thought would be cool to do with this one, we start out with me asking Ryan a few questions, and then we flip it and Ryan asks me a few questions. And so we kind of get a double podcast in there at the same time. So it was kind of a fun twist there. In the first half, we talk about the importance of community branding engagement. Ryan goes through some ways he feels cities can do this more effectively to create tiered branding, capture more meaningful input, and make engagement fun, worthwhile, and attainable for everyone. And then in the second half, he asked me a little bit about how here at Verdunity, we are using fiscal analysis, fiscal sustainability as a common language to improve alignment among elected officials, citizens, and other stakeholders in the community. Kind of, again, climbing that food chain to create that common vision and language and alignment across different departments and maybe different groups and interests in your community. And then also we talk a little bit about some of what we're trying to do with our work on engagement as well, because finding new and better ways to reach different people in a community is so important. And it's hard work. It takes time and, it takes a lot of different ways to meet people where they are. So, we talked through a lot of different ideas of both of our groups and how we're trying to tackle that challenge. So hope you enjoy this conversation with Ryan Short. Here you go. Today I've got with me Ryan Short with Civic Brand. Ryan has been a friend of mine for a while and somebody that we have tried to work with a number of times in the past and are finally getting around to doing that. Ryan, how you doing today?
Yeah, doing great. Chat with you.
So you're chatting with me from Salida, Colorado. We were just before we hit record, we're talking about you. You've recently picked up the family from North Texas and moved up there to Colorado. And I guess some of this COVID working remote stuff was kind of the final thing that made it, I guess, pushed you guys over the edge to move, to relocate.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, we had been one of those things we had wanted to do, kind of talked about for a long time. And working with cities, we work across the country. We don't really have like any one, regional focus area. And so, clients don't really come to us. We're always traveling and going to them. So COVID forced us to work remote and it worked really well for us and for our team. And I've moved to Colorado. We've since brought on a group in Oklahoma City. So we've kind of got the team kind of spread out in a couple different states now, and it's going good.
We may come back at the end and you and I can both offer a couple of tips for working remote, because our team's the same situation. We're spread out as well. So, excuse me, I wanted to get you on to talk, about a number of things, but really dig into engagement with communities. But why don't you start by talking a little bit about your personal background? You're a marketing, branding, communications guy that found your way into urbanism and city building. And I don't know that I've ever heard the full story of how that happened. So why don't you just introduce us to Ryan and Civic Brand and what you guys do?
Yeah. We do branding and identity work for cities. Pretty much everything we do that kind of starts with engagement. Whether we are doing more branding city type projects or we are working on planning projects with firms like you guys, where it's comp plans and downtown plans. But public engagement is kind of that core that no matter what we're doing, that's kind of where we start from. My personal background and even our firm's background. So we started our company in 2008. And yeah, we were a marketing and design firm that kind of worked with anybody, businesses. But the big thing that we did was we really focused on user experience. And user experience in kind of the design world A lot of people think of like app design and web design, just kind of where that term came from. But at the end of the day, it applies to anything, you know, and it's really asking questions, listening, understand how people, you know, use, whether it's products, use streets, use anything, observing where they struggle, where they succeed, and designing solutions to improve that. And so that was, you know, we were doing that for just, you know, any company really. We worked with a couple different architect firms where we did their design and their branding and their marketing. They really liked our process and kind of saw how we did that. And they were like, man, you should help us on some of these projects we're working on with our clients, because we just like the way you guys approach these projects and questions. And that kind of pulled us like sideways sort of into this, you know, civic space. And then kind of about the same time, I personally was just into why our city's built a certain way. And I'd kind of like just, but that was not professionally at all. It was just like, you know, I found some of like Chuck's early content with Strong Towns of like roads and walkability and human scale design. And I think that's where it was kind of a light bulb moment for me. Because I think, you know, when I would observe cities, you know, whether it's just as a visitor or walking around towns, you know, I knew what aesthetics I liked. You know, I like kind of like historic downtown and it was real walkable. But in my mind, that was just like a personal preference. It was just like a personal taste. As I kind of started getting into like Chuck's work and even the work that you do, I started to see that like some of those things were like not just rooted in like aesthetics, but there's like psychology behind that of like human design. There's the whole fiscal stuff that gets into like why that makes sense and why that's attractive. And that was a real light bulb moment for me, because it's like there's truth in design. It's not all just personal taste. It's not like, well, some people like walkable things and some people don't. It's like, well, as humans, we need these things. So that's kind of a long answer of how we kind of got into that. But we just kind of doubled down and went down that rabbit hole of like educating ourselves and working with a bunch of, surrounding ourselves with a bunch of smart people like yourself, and learning as much as we can and kind of applying what we did on the design user experience world, just applying that to the civic space. And so, yeah, we're not planners. We're not landscape architects, you know, but we work and understand, you know, that world, and that's what we do.
Yeah. It's, I have always gravitated to people inside our team. We call ourselves a bunch of unicorns. Like we're not a typical engineer. We're not a typical planner. We're not a typical, you know, real estate or economic development folks, but we all, you know, we have some level, most of my team at least has some level of training or, you know, in this type of work, but we still kind of have these interests that cross over into other areas. And, it's just, it's been really interesting with kind of the new urbanism movement and also Strong Towns, of just seeing how many people outside of traditional planning and engineering fields care about this stuff and how many are getting into like into doing this work, whether it's, you know, a company like yours, or just individuals that are getting on their P&Z or their council, you know, and just volunteering time. And I'm always amazed at how many people today I find inside cities that are so just well informed about these things that it, you know, in, they could probably run circles about some of the people that are that have letters after their name doing this stuff. So
that's what I think is interesting. Is, I mean, not being, you know, a trained planner and coming to those, you know, I think at first I would kind of be hesitant to like speak up in certain meetings and public scenarios, you know, because you'd have the trained professionals in there. That I was kind of surprised to learn how many actual engineers, city council members, city staff aren't well versed in a lot of these things compared to some of the general public that just through, whether it's Twitter or blogs or things, they have this like armchair urbanist kind of education just from reading stuff, and in some ways they know more about some of these things than the quote unquote professionals.
Well, so let's I think that's something I guess an approach that you and I and our groups share is trying to get down to the local level and tap into that knowledge and those resources. And you know, our role is really facilitators and connectors to try to connect those resources together to make things happen. But you let's talk, I guess, community branding first. You know, you, as you mentioned, you're doing this work all over the country. What do you feel like cities are missing or maybe need to think differently about when it comes to community branding? Because I do think, you know, I've seen your talks and done some work with you and think you kind of have an interesting take at it, you know, coming from non-city marketing background, but what's your approach, and then what do you feel like these cities are missing in that area?
Yeah. I mean, I think, the big thing that we really try to hammer home when we start out these projects is that, the brand is not a logo, right? And I think where cities start to get wrong is they just think either what's our logo, and that gets complex because there's the city government brand and logo, but then there's the place, and the place is not the same thing as the city government. Those are, there's overlap there. But then I think the other thing is they view it purely as marketing. How do we market, to get more businesses, more visitors? And I think if you instead flip that, and branding is a little bit more just about knowing who you are and understanding who you are and kind of using that as a decision-making tool or framework for everything, it becomes a lot more valuable to every community versus just the community that is trying to like market to tourists or really grow. Because we work with a lot of communities that they're getting so much growth that they're struggling to deal with the growth. And so to them, they might think, well, we don't need branding. We're already growing so much. And I would argue for them, well, that's when you need branding more than ever, because mm-hmm. branding is going to help you get the right growth for you and think about how you manage that. And so it's just kind of a different mindset. I think sometimes we get, words are kind of loaded and we hear branding and we kind of, some people think one thing and some people think another. So we always just try to start with, well, what do we mean by that? And it's really just, who are we, where are we trying to go? And then what are the tools that can help you kind of, use that as a decision-making filter.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the Toyota example and how you kind of have those stacked levels of a brand that all kind of come back together at the top?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny working from home, my kids, they get to overhear our my meetings. And so anytime I start rolling into our Toyota example, my kids will roll their eyes in the background because they're like, I've heard dad
not
say
again,
this.
Not again, dad.
But no, it's so, when we do engagement and we work with communities, they're naturally diverse, complex places. And, you have different groups. You have those that are young, those that are old, those that are new to the community, those that have been there forever. Some want it to grow. Some want it to stay the same. You have all these different groups. And oftentimes they want what seems like polar opposite things out of their community, like the growth versus no growth. And so, in planning, branding, anything, it's like, how do you create a brand or a plan that's going to speak to all these audiences? And so what we do is, and why I use the Toyota example is if we look for the common threads. And so the Toyota example is if you look at Toyota's audiences, on one hand, they have the pickup truck audience. Wants things to be rugged, tough, driving through the mud. On the other hand, they have the Prius audience, wants things to be environmentally friendly, got minivans, et cetera. And so instead of overly catering to any one of those audiences, they look at, well, what's the shared value? What's the common thread that they all share? And I think in Toyota's example, they would say it's quality and dependability, that whether you want the Prius or the truck, you want it to be quality and dependable. And so they really build their brand around that. And that allows them in their marketing to still go market to the truck guys, to still go market to the mm-hmm. Prius guys, but they're coming from this shared viewpoint of quality and dependability. And so whether we're doing branding or a comp plan or a downtown plan, we try to really use that and think about those different audiences, just like those different vehicles.
Well, there you go. Your kids got to hear it for about the 800th time.
Yeah.
There, yeah. thanks to me. So you mentioned you started in the branding work, you're getting into more of the engagement. How have you seen engagement change over the last couple years and some of the tools that cities are using? I think, we may have time to get into a little more specifics of some of, engagement and how we reach different people, but just at a high level, how have you seen that change between, what you were doing, 4 years ago, kind of pre-COVID to how you guys are using different tools today?
Yeah. I mean, I think not surprisingly, everybody, we've all been on about a million Zoom calls over the last couple of years. People are just naturally, they have more experience with, engaging digitally. And so that's really changed things a lot, and just opening that up to where, my grandmother has been on multiple Zoom meetings. She can scan a QR code now. So a lot of those technologies that can connect us, the good thing is people are more familiar with them. I still, though, always go back to, you know, you need to have a really balanced approach. Because I think pre-COVID, cities were very focused on everything was like a public meeting, everything, you know, and there's a lot of people that, you know, don't want to go to a public meeting or they can't go to a public meeting because they're at work. I think when you go, you need to be careful to not go too far the other way to where you're just getting too cute with the digital and you're just alienating a different audience. You know, my grandmother now can't use your tools because they're too tricked up or they're too digital. And so I think having that balanced approach has kind of come along at the same time that I think cities are valuing equity and diversity and inclusion. You know, more elected officials are kind of tasked with that and charged with, you know, really trying to bring that to their engagement process. And so for us, that just means we got to have a lot of different tools so that we can kind of apply them to each group as it makes sense.
So give an example of something non-public meeting and non-Zoom related that you guys are doing to engage folks.
You know, we like to, you know, throw a party instead of having a public meeting, you know, have a party. And whether that's like a block party or tapping into an existing event. So we'll do a lot of, you know, placemaking activation type of things where, you know, sometimes there is a very like tactical urbanism goal that's out of that. You know, maybe you're trying to like slow traffic or test something out. But a lot of times it's just, you're just trying to throw a party. You're just trying to get people to engage in different ways. And so that's, I think, a good example of you're going to reach more young people that, you know, that aren't typically attending a public meeting, but you're not going to alienate someone who, you know, is going to fumble through trying to use your fancy digital tool. They just show up and they get free popsicle and they talk to you and they play games and engage. And so, you know, we try to find things like that. Another one is just on the street engagement. You know, we just did the Breckenridge Open Space Trails Master Plan out here in Colorado. And we just went out on the trails and just talked to people as they were using the trails. So we didn't expect them to come to our public meeting or take our survey. We just hung out at the trailhead, asked them how they're doing, anything you change about these trails, and just have conversations and listen to them.
Yeah. A lot of times it's, you know, going to people where they are and connecting with them. And I know one of the challenges I think with engagement is, at least that we see, is to do it right. It does take time, you know, to reach different groups where they are, when they're there, to do it right. It takes a lot of time and energy. And, you know, some cities have a pretty, you know, robust PR public engagement, you know, arm, staff that can go do some of these things on an ongoing basis. Sometimes they have an opportunity to do it with a project to, you know, to subcontract or contract directly with somebody like you guys to do it, or our team, or whatever. But we keep coming back to trying to explain to communities that it's really important to have that dialogue, that two-way dialogue going with your citizens, you know, 365 year round, all the time. It shouldn't just be something that you do with a specific project. Cause a lot of times, whether it's interesting, whether it's engagement for a planning project or it's engagement for like a site development or an engineering project that we do, it's related to that project. And especially with development work, that's, they come about that project, but then they want to talk about other, you know, other things, right? Excuse me. But that ongoing narrative in a community is so, so important. And how do you do that with these different segments or sub segments of your community? I think digital is definitely a way to do that. Social media is a way to do that. And to me, I mean, in today's time, that's just such a worthwhile investment, I think, right? Yeah. Of just something that's going to get a high return for cities. If you really want to build that trust and build that culture of collaboration that we talk so much about, you've just got to have that ongoing dialogue so that when it's no different than our companies, right? I mean, you want to talk about things, and then when the hot point, you know, when something hot comes, you still have that baseline culture, you know, underneath there to help you out. And I think that's the same thing in communities. So do you guys do anything like that where you're doing ongoing kind of education and engagement with a community, you know, across the whole year? Is it all tied to projects?
Yeah. So projects are oftentimes kind of the Trojan horse that kind of gets us in, you know, and we kind of get the relationship with the community. And, But yeah, we definitely try to set up the community for success ongoing. Because like you said, you can't just, it's difficult to do community-wide engagement when the city hasn't done any engagement before, right? And so one of the ways that we try to do that ongoing engagement is, you know, when we are branding a project, like a comprehensive plan or a downtown plan, you know, oftentimes a project brand will be created and, you know, it has a name and people see it and it's all over signs and banners and things like that. What we've been trying to do is help communities create that brand in a way that it's going to live on after the initial planning phase is done. And so a good example of that we did was in Las Cruces, New Mexico. We developed the Elevate Las Cruces brand, and that didn't just sunset at the end of the comp plan. It became one, a brand that they could do implementation through and show how they're implementing things from that plan. But then also the community knows that anytime they see Elevate Las Cruces, they know that their input is being sought. So when they go to do other efforts, whether it's a parks plan or a trails plan, they do it under that Elevate Las Cruces brand. So that they're not like kind of creating a new brand for every project they want to do. Instead, it's this ongoing engagement brand. So that's one of the main ways that we do that is kind of just try to help them facilitate that. And then the second way is, you know, there's, especially with branding projects, but you probably see it too in downtown plans and things. There's so many organizations and groups that are often all trying to push the city forward at the same time, but they're kind of just all doing it in different ways. So one of the ways that we try to coordinate that is just bringing those groups together quarterly to kind of talk about what they're each doing. You know, because I mean, you'll just have two, you know, just take like the chamber and visit or the economic development. They're out there trying to promote and market the city, but they're kind of just not talking to each other. And so coordinating those things is another way we do that.
So that's, could not agree more with the plan stuff that we do. And, you know, we'll get into our fiscal work here in a minute, I think, but we're always trying to talk with cities about climbing that food chain and thinking more holistically with how they engage their community, how they connect the different plans together. Because it is, it's gotten so siloed where we want to have a, you know, economic development wants a brand and then the chamber has something. And then, like you mentioned, the city has one and then the community overall has one. And I mean, the next thing you know, you live in that city and you have no idea what your own identity is, or you work in that city, even worse, if you're working in that city and you don't know what other groups are doing. So, I mean, especially comprehensive plans. You know, our view on those is they really do need to be comprehensive and means you've got to integrate so many things together, and engagement and branding is a critical part of that. So, you know, we do something similar where we try to find that entry point, whatever the project is. But through that process, we're trying to explain more. The goal is to have an ongoing integrated effort that everybody can connect with, whether you're in a city organization or department, or you're someone that lives or, you know, works in that community as well. And you're one of the groups that I think is out there really doing leading work in that regard in terms of connecting those, you know, across community. And we joked earlier about Toyota, but I think, I mean, that is so, that's it. I mean, that's how cities need to think is, yeah, like, what is their, you know, what's that phrase that represents the values that represent the entire community, and then how do things connect back to that? So what do you do a lot of engagement for planning projects. And I know, you know, you followed a lot of Strong Towns and New Urbanist work and followed some R work. I don't know that I've ever asked you this question, but just what are your thoughts on planning projects, you know, long range planning projects, downtown plans? Some of our friends in the Strong Town circles will, you know, say maybe don't think as highly of planning, and maybe that kind of long range planning is not needed, and we just need to kind of live in today and do the next best thing. But you've been on both sides of that, whether it's a, you know, a project or a long range effort. What's your kind of personal take on planning and where it fits in our communities?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely those camps out there. There's the, and I agree with both. You know, there's the camp that's stop planning, start doing, right? We just need to get out there and, you know, pick weeds and make things happen. And I think there's a lot of that that's very needed and very true, because people aren't, you know, they're kind of sitting back and just complaining to their city or waiting for the city to do things. But I think long-term planning is very vital and very essential. So I think you need to do both. You know, our kind of personal, my personal philosophy, which I've woven into our company's philosophy, and it's a little cliche, I think, in the planning world to sometimes quote Jane Jacobs because everybody does it. But her quote that's, you know, cities have the ability to provide something for everybody only when they're created by everybody. I think, you know, on the short term, that's, yeah, everybody needs to get out there and do something for your community. But in the long term, when we're doing these long range plans, we need to do engagement. We need to reach everybody. And I take that to mean equitable engagement. I think when cities have a public meeting or they put out a survey, that's not necessarily equitable. It's equal. Everybody's equally available to go to this meeting or equally, you know, available to take the survey. But equity is, you know, really going to them, meeting them where they're at, making it, you know, showing them how why it matters to them. So I mean, yeah, I relate to both of those camps, but we kind of sit in the middle that like you got to do it all. It's dumb to not do long-term planning. It's also dumb to not do stuff today. So
that's kind of exactly where we are too. Is I see, you know, for the branding reason, for resource stewardship reasons, there's definitely reasons to think bigger, more connected, more integrated, more long-term. But the paralysis, you know, just planning just to plan doesn't get our cities anywhere either. So striking that balance in the middle is really important.
Well, real quick, just, I mean, just an example of that, of this, a personal example. So our son joined the baseball team out here, and the very first baseball practice that they have, they bring all the kids from all the different leagues and they don't do any baseball. What the kids do is they scrape gum off of underneath the bleachers. They paint the backstop, they repaint it. The kids have to like clean up the field, paint everything, take care of it. And I think one,
really,
that speaks to that, like, do something now, but then they also have some ownership. And so as the season goes through, they're probably less likely to stick gum under there. They're probably less likely to like throw the baseball against the wall that's painted, you know, because they had to paint it. And so I think, you know, in our, the projects we do, you know, get people out there and get them to paint a mural, get them to do those temporary right now things, ask them what they want in the long term. I think you can do both of those things together, and all of a sudden they're going to feel like they have some vested interest in it versus, you know, they're just a consumer of the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a mentality that really does need to shift. I feel like there is so much of that, of like, it's all on our city to provide all these things to us, and we're going to consume all these things. And, oh, by the way, keep my tax rate down. And right. Oh, by the way, you guys are doing things so great that our values are going up, but I don't want that. You know, it's a little bit of a thankless job to work for a city these days, of just how do you just please everybody. But that's what's so great about the collaborative spirit and getting people to work together to, you know, everybody works together to make their neighborhood and their community a little bit better. And, you know, just like we were talking earlier about the amazing knowledge that's out there within city residents and businesses and all that now, that there's so many examples now where either individuals or organizations or nonprofits or even private businesses are stepping up to help their community just because their community finally asked them to, you know, so just tapping into that potential and connecting it is really where the engagement and some of that planning work comes in. So let's zoom all the way out to just cities in general. What do you, I like to talk with folks about this because this is kind of where my head is all the time, but you know, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing communities right now? And what do you think they should be doing to address it?
And how much we're zooming out, I guess, because I mean, I think the biggest thing that's very much today right now is housing. You know, I think, I mean, every community is trying to figure that out. The federal government's trying to figure that out. And it's a tough one. You know, we just did this like housing pop-up exhibit where people could kind of come in and learn about what causes housing problems. And then we have this survey, you know, people can kind of give their input. And the reason it's so tough is because I think a lot of people do think it's simple, super simple to solve. It's like, we'll just build more. We'll just, you know, just tax second homeowners. Everybody has the bullet, you know, the magic bullet answer. I think personally, I think we're trying to hit that at so many ways from so many angles that I think some of the things we are doing are kind of working, some are kind of not. But I think the market and some of the things we're doing are going to at least make that somewhat better. I think the biggest thing, like, because it's a little bit more like long term and is going to require a culture shift, is probably honestly a lot of the things that you focus on, the fiscal stuff, and specifically how sprawl and the growth patterns of cities are related to the fiscal. I think that's the biggest, because that's not something like housing where the market can sort of correct itself, right? Like, we are going to have to make some actual changes to how we're doing things. And we've just done them, ironically, not that long. Like, we've only built cities in a certain way, really, in the grand scheme of things, not that differently for that long. But in our brains, I feel like it feels like we could never change. You know, it's still going to be auto-centric. It's still going to be, you know, and I think the best minds in our country right now are working for like Facebook and Amazon and trying to figure out how to get people to click buttons. And that's not helping. Like, we need those people figuring out how to like create sustainable places. And we need those people figuring out, you know, solving a lot of the bigger problems instead of how to get somebody to click an ad. I would put that as like the biggest issue. This sounds dark, I feel like, sometimes when I explain it certain ways, but like, there was moments during COVID where I was a little like, I thought the silver lining of COVID was we were going to come out of this with this like cultural shift, and we were going to go back and our priorities were all going to be back in order.
And me too, man.
there's some glimmers of that and like pockets of that that I feel like some people hold on to, but I feel like from a city auto standpoint, it's like right back to business as usual, you know?
Yeah, so two thoughts on that. The affordable, I would actually answer it very similarly. Just last week, last Thursday night, talking about affordability in South Dallas. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, several times over the last couple of years, I've been right there where you are in Salida, talking about affordability in Colorado, which is a completely different discussion. Right. And are you working with Becky on your housing stuff there?
Yeah. That's what we did
Isn't she awesome? She's amazing. But, you know, affordability just right there, that has such a different, there's a million different definitions of what affordable housing is. And you get into any conversation with anybody and like, you know, you have two or three people talking about it and all of a sudden you have different definitions and off you go. Right. And you know, I think for us, for me personally, and for our organization, the fiscal sustainability, you know, we can talk about climate change, we can talk about housing affordability and equity and inclusiveness and social issues. I mean, we can talk about so many things that are broken in our cities right now. But at the end of the day, the money and the math kind of connects them all together. And that's kind of a similar to the Toyota analogy, that we do planning, we do engineering, we do some economic development, some education, but it's all through that lens of fiscal stewardship, fiscal sustainability, and kind of shining that spotlight on a lot of things that we say, especially here in Texas, you know, where you were and I am, we say we're fiscally sustainable. We say we're fiscal conservatives, but a lot of what we're doing is anything but when you view it from affordability or from, you know, long-term stewardship or fiscal sustainability. So I do think that's such a huge issue. And it's so, I kept thinking that during COVID, that like, man, this is going to be the thing that's going to get people to see the value of walkable neighborhoods and walkable communities and start to you know, see what's missing in all of these, you know, suburban areas. And then even coming out of it with, you know, just some of the crunches on personal finance and on city governments and some of that stuff, I was like, man, this is kind of it. This is going to be that tipping point for us. And then kind of the ARPA and some of the federal money came out, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, the budgets were back flush and cities were back to doing what they were doing. And you know, everybody's still, it's the same old cycle. It's like, we want everything. We don't want to pay for it, you know, lower our taxes. And You're not here anymore, so you don't see them as much, but we have all the political ads in Texas running now about keeping taxes low. And every time I see one of those ads, I just think about that's great for today. We're all going to benefit from it today, but what's going to happen 10 years, 10 years from now when we can't fix any of this mess that we've built? So
Yeah. It's just silly to me when people talk, they try to talk about city services and taxes and all these things separately. You know, like you can't just talk about taxes and raising or lowering them if you're not talking about, well, what is that money going towards? Because, you know, I mean, I haven't found many communities where they don't want services. They don't want roads and police and fire. You know, they want all of those things. They just also want to pay as little as possible, which who doesn't? I'd hoped for some bigger change. And I think you're right that if you don't solve the, once you solve the fiscal stuff, it makes it a lot easier to tackle those other problems. You know, I mean, everything's about money in life, obviously, but if I know my finances are in order, I'm then freed up mentally to be a better dad and to be a better husband and do all those other things that are important.
And a lot of what shows with our work is the things that are in the best interest of a city fiscally or keeping, you know, quality of service for an affordable price, that's all these small development, incremental, walkable play. There's all these other benefits of it too. So, it is all connected. And then when you see somewhere getting it right, the challenge really becomes affordability and the Salida, Colorado version of it. Mm-hmm. Which is we built such a great place that so many people want to be a part of. How do we, how do we keep that affordable? So, well, I know, we've been talking about doing this podcast for us, and I know you have a podcast as well. So I thought it might be fun if we flip the script on this a little bit, and I just asked you a few questions. So if you want to fire a couple my way, and I can field some of those, and then we can try to wrap it up from there.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm curious, you know, you coming from the fiscal angle, where do you see the overlap with fiscal and, you know, community vision and community identity? Like, how does that play into those things? Because I know in the comp plan process, you know, you kind of start with a lot of visioning, and how do you get those two together?
Yeah, I like to say with a lot of the plans that we do, I used to be a part of a lot of comp plans. And one of the first things they would do is go in the very first meeting. It's like, what do you love about your community? What do you want to be? Kind of the dreamy stuff of like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or what's the perfect city look like? And I was always frustrated that there weren't constraints put on that conversation of like, what do we actually have the resources or the political will to actually do? And that's where so much of the frustration from residents comes from too, is like, well, we went to a meeting and we gave them all these great ideas and then none of them happen. And so I think that's where the fiscal analysis is so key, is right up front with the work we do of saying, here's where you're at. Here's how your development pattern is doing in terms of which development patterns are producing extra tax base for you, which ones are costing more to serve, and just cumulatively across your city, how does that work? And then, you know, then it gets into this interesting conversation about the most fiscally productive places are always the downtowns. And how does the downtown connect to the identity and the brand and the culture of your community? And you can start to get into, well, a neighborhood over here on the edge. It's got an HOA or whatever, but where's the identity to it? Versus the downtown and being able to connect. In fact, we were just having a conversation this morning preparing for a session that we're going to be doing at the Texas Downtown Conference coming up. And we were talking about this exact intersection of how to just the fiscal value of downtowns. There's a lot of conversation about how they benefit, you know, the vision or the identity or tourism or whatever. But if you ask me that question, they're absolutely critical to the fiscal health of a city. So, I think showing people that investing in your downtown and doubling down on a really strong brand and identity for your community and doing that in your downtown, especially when you pair it up with incremental development, small development projects, tactical projects, it's the fastest way to close the fiscal gap is investing in your downtown. So it's a pretty easy, it's a long-winded answer, but it's a pretty easy connection to make that your identity needs to be represented the most in your downtown, and the downtown is the direct connection to fiscal health for your community.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think kind of going back to that Toyota example, like your downtown is almost like what sits in the middle of all those things, right? You've got all these different audiences and neighborhoods, but your downtown is that center core of it. Well, I'm curious, like, I mean, you do a lot of work in Texas and kind of the surrounding states there, and a lot of, you know, historically auto-centric, probably sprawl-driven areas.
The belly of the beast.
Yeah. So what does success look like? You know, when you like, because I guess I'm just curious. You know, you're not working with communities that are trying to like totally change 180 and become, you know, this, you know, New York City type community. They still want to maintain their identity, but how do you push them in the right direction and still make them feel like they are who they are?
That's a great question, because you have some places that we do hear pushback. Like our whole identity is we are a bedroom community, or we are an auto-centric place, and we're happy with that. We want to keep it that way. And in that case, it just frames the conversation in, okay, you can be this, but here's the implications of it. You know, you're going to have to pay more to pay for this more spread out pattern and more infrastructure. And if you're willing and able to do that, you know, good on you. That's your choice. That's the kind of place you want to be. But just kind of, you know, so success in some ways is just getting alignment between what they are and what people are paying. Beyond that, though, when you start to unpack the development patterns, there's always this group that comes into a project saying, "I don't want density. you know, mixed use is bad. Don't drop a lane, you know, for a bike lane. We need that for, you know, our cars." But when you show some of the fiscal analysis and you present that, and then present them with that challenge of like, okay, you can keep it the way it is, but you're going to have to pay more in taxes and fees and other things, and you can back that up with real numbers, a lot of them will look at that and say, okay, if density is good, if walkable neighborhoods can help some of this, I'll support it. And it becomes a different kind of conversation about where do you do it? How do you design it so that it fits their community? You know, you're not trying to like New York their city. But a lot of times it's general density. It's two or three stories or just a second unit on a lot or something like that that makes all the difference in the world. You show some of that and a lot of people will come around. Not everybody, but a lot. And COVID has helped in that regard with people, even if they are in an auto-centric place, they do still like to walk or bike to the park. They may say, well, I'm never going to go ride a bike to go get groceries, but I would like to bike or walk to the park a little more, or I would like my kids to be able to walk and play out in the street without, you know, a teenager blowing down the road at 80 miles an hour kind of thing. So I think success is different for every place, but for me and for our team, if we can just get people thinking about that language of what real fiscal sustainability means, and how to start to use all the different resources in a community to close those gaps. Working together. I mean, there's a lot of hows. There's a lot of tools. You know these too, right? I mean, there's a lot of tools out there to do things better. It's just a lot of our work gets at the why of really getting cities collectively, whether it's citizens, businesses, developers, or council elected appointed officials, to just think about why their community's there and how long do they want their community to last, and showing them that their current decisions maybe don't align with some of those values and outcomes that they say they have. Right. And then the ideas start to unlock and people start to work together. So for us, it's plans, comp plans, especially, or comp plans are a way to get at the why in the bigger conversation. For us, it's less about the future land use map and some of that stuff. It's more about having the right conversations. Downtown plans, I think, are a little more implementation focused. That's where you can make the most progress in a short amount of time for, you know, local businesses, tax base, jobs, identity, all of the above. So that's kind of why we're in that space. But winning, to roll that all up, winning is just get it. If we can get communities to have the right conversation, and get away from so many elected officials being able to hide behind this, oh, I lowered your tax rate again for the eighth year in a row. There's right. just, like you said earlier, there's so much more to the conversation than just lowering the tax rate, that we need more responsible leaders to put that on the table if we're going to address those bigger issues that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of, you know, the elected officials, you know, we've got our elections coming up. I'm curious, you know, because I mean, when you're doing long range planning, you know, you're thinking out 20, 30 year plans for a community. So how do you balance that with, you know, the political side of things, which is often very short term? It's focused on like this election cycle and pointing to things that they can, you know, do to get reelected. And, you know, I've seen where there's good plans and good projects that get thrown out just because new leadership comes in and they need to put their stamp on it. So how do you balance that like overhaul of politicians and council members and all that?
Yeah, that's an ongoing challenge in cities for sure. But I would say this is something that I learned from your world a little bit. And when I was doing some grad school work in business management and kind of entrepreneurship, some of that. Let's go back to your Toyota example. How does Toyota maintain that brand and that identity as they transition CEOs or leaders or whatever, right? They have that established, they have that common language, those talking points that filter down through their organization, right? That's the same way it needs to work in a city. We need to define, here's our values, here's what's important to us, and set that culture. I don't know about you, but a lot of the most successful places I worked, there's a culture that you're going to be on the parks board before you're ever on planning and zoning, and you're going to be on planning and zoning before you ever have a chance at council. And when you get on those, you know, yeah, there's the pet projects or the issues, the one-off things that you might talk about, but there's that football field, there's the sidelines that we're trying to go this way, and these are out of bounds, and that's it. That's what I said earlier about with comp plans, of trying to, there's bigger things we try to achieve there, of like, I mean we are trying to get future land use maps and other things adopted as well, but I'm really, success at the end of it is if we feel like there's more alignment and that language of a city engineer and a planner and a council member and a P&Z commissioner and John Q citizen can all talk about fiscal sustainability, and we want to, you know, we want to be a stronger fiscal city short and long term, and then articulate what their role in that is, that's success. I don't care what's on the paper.
Right.
And that's missing, frankly. I mean, that's what allows some of these just crazy cycles of somebody runs and they get in there for 2 years, that they have no idea what's going on. They run on a pet project and get everybody stirred up, and then they get in there and you could talk to so many people that ran for council. They thought it was a good idea. Then they get on council and it's like, oh, well, this is a little different with how this works. So the ongoing education and just that culture has got to be set, and then you can start to plug the different folks into it. And I mean, I think that's a mayor and a city manager's job to kind of work in tandem to start. And it's exciting to see some of the cool stories around the country in the last couple of years, or, you know, mayors and city managers and other people that are really kind of stepping up to set that culture of like, this is what we want our community to be. And it's about much, much more than one elected official or a 2 year cycle.
Yeah. And that's where I think, you know, you can call it brand, you can call it vision, culture, identity, whatever. Yep. Like, we're all talking about the same thing. And when you nail that, it's bigger than one elected official, one council, one election cycle. And I think the only way to get to that, though, is that engagement. You know, you have to reach everybody. Yep. And so I guess everybody's always trying to reach the audience that's hardest to reach, right? And it's no shock that, you know, when you do surveys, public meetings, you're overwhelmingly going to hear from older audience, mostly white. A lot of them have been in the community a longer time, and they own property. And, you know, we talk about this a lot internally, and I know you guys probably do as well, that You know, public engagement for a city, there's a hierarchy of needs that people have. And only when you get to a certain point, are you like willing and able to go engage with your city and talk about these things. I mean, when you're renting, living in an apartment, and you're just trying to make it by, you're not really thinking about that. And so I guess I'm just curious, you know, what conversations have you guys had about that, or how do you approach that? Because those are people that we need to reach, but it's not that they don't care. It's just not on their
radar. You know, yeah. Well, that's something my colleague AJ is, our whole team, but especially AJ, is extremely passionate about this. And there's a couple things, like, you know, we do really try to go boots on the ground to the different, you know, the different areas and neighborhoods and people. But sometimes, like, one of the blocks we get on some of these projects is you try to identify kind of a stakeholder group or things like that. And it's so easy for cities to just kind of fall. They have the same people, right, that they're comfortable with, and they know, oh, well, this guy can talk about bikes, and this guy can talk about the seniors, and this lady can talk about this or that. And you know, before you know it, you've got the same people in that city that are on every one of these committees talking about everything. That's a real problem that we always, you know, we try to get through that by saying, you get that group, you know, we know we're going to have to work with that group. We're going to get that. But then what are the next kind of two or three levels down from that of like, who do they know? Who are the organizations that they know, or the people in different neighborhoods? And usually, you know, a couple of layers down, you can start to get to the who's who of like who the real people are that can kind of get you connected to who you want. Right. So that's an area I've learned a ton about in the last couple of years working on more of these, but it is hard. It is hard work. And it's always in transparency, it's full transparency here. That is hard for us to try to balance our interest in doing it right with what a lot of cities are willing to pay. And I'm sure you have that same battle. Like, yeah. You know, you want to do it right. You know, you're capable of doing so much more. And then it's just like, well, but yeah, still trying to do right and reach the right people that way. But it's an ongoing effort to get there. And you're right. A lot of people that are renting or just don't have the means, they're so buried in how do I pay the bills today? They could care less about a visioning project or a brand for the city. But their opinion matters every bit as much as the others. And I think another kind of layer to that is kind of goes back to affordability a little bit, but there are more and more people that are falling out of that group that had plenty of money to do things that are now in that, I'm just trying to get by. I'd love to come to it, you know, and they're familiar with it. They've been to those meetings in the past, but now it's a different story. However they ended up there, it's a different story for them. Right. And so that's something I don't think enough cities are really aware that are happening, is that kind of that wealth gap and that transition of people that used to be able to afford homes in their city and those who can't anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and kind of related to that, I mean, one thing that we've seen, you know, somebody having 3 minutes at a public meeting to kind of, that's their one chance to speak. That's like not an efficient way to do things. And I think the fact that we've done engagement like that for so long, what we've found is that when people do engage with the city, they come with their personal hat of like, what do I need to protect my property and my this? And how is this project you're talking about going to impact me? We've really started to flip it around and say, we ask the same question in two ways. Kevin, how would you personally answer this question? And then Kevin, how would you answer this question on behalf of your community? And we found that that's like really eye-opening that, you know, because yeah, if you are a property owner, and you ask them what's best for you, that's where you're going to pull out a lot of these like NIMBY type of opinions, because you're asking them to be selfish and you're not asking them about their community. And so I'm curious, how do you guys do that? Like, how do you get people to start thinking about their community versus thinking about themselves?
That fiscal analysis has been it for us. And the Taylor comp plan that we worked on, you know, when we started that, project, council and Tom Yantis and some of the staff were, kind of the, the assumed direction of the city was we want to grow out. We want more of the stuff that all the, the Round Rocks and Georgetowns and other parts of, those fast growing Central Texas communities are getting. And when we got into it, and we showed the fiscal analysis and the productivity of Taylor's downtown and small, the traditional pattern of development, and just how that could provide affordable housing for different generations of a family and all of these other things, the community, majority of the community started to see that, like, okay, we can get all of these things that we want, in a little different way. And ultimately at the end of that project, when they had the two scenarios of grow out or grow in a, I forget what they, I think they basically called it the fiscal scenario, which was basically infill out, but protecting the traditional development pattern and growing inside out. Like 83 or 87% of the people surveyed said they wanted the fiscal infill out scenario. And that blew everybody's minds, but it was because they did want to keep things affordable long-term. They wanted to keep that character that they had. And, we just were able to show them that once you jump on this suburban auto-centric train, it's so hard to get off of it. And then we got questions after it. Taylor got the Samsung plant, and it's like, well, how's the Samsung thing going to alter everything? And the only thing that's changed is how fast they're going to grow, but they're still committed to doing it in the same pattern.
Yeah.
So it there's again, like, so many, when you look at fiscally productive development and what generates the most tax base and what is most affordable for residents, it's also the things that provide the best quality of life to the most people. And so it really is kind of a, and so many times we'll hear after the fact, we're like, that's so obvious. Like, why don't we do that? And you just kind of shrug your shoulders and there's usually a developer in the back of the room that knows exactly why they don't do it that way, but that's a different conversation, I guess. But yeah, a lot of people can connect with, they want a good quality of life for a decent, affordable cost. And when you can show how to do that for people of different means and interests and backgrounds, most people are good humans at the end of the day and get behind that.
Right. Yeah. And I think the other thing too, that is just helping people not be threatened by some of those changes, right? Like, I think that's yep. fear is that it is going to, you're going to turn my neighborhood into New York City, or you're going to do this, and it's, I think,
don't uptown my Plano.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, because no city is changing that much. No one's really suggesting that either. No one's pitching that,
Yeah, well, and that's a valid concern from some places. And that's part of it, too, of like, okay, well, what do you do if we change our code to do these things that these more, productive development patterns of vertical development and all of that? How are you going to keep it from gentrifying and pushing people out? And, you got to do like what Monty, I love the phrase Monty came up with, but put a lid on it, cap it at three stories or two stories or whatever, but you still have to protect the character of your community. That's still important, but you don't have to do, 10 story buildings to make this stuff work. You just, it's more about the size and the scale of the individual buildings. And that's when a lot of people see the pictures and examples combined with the numbers, it's not threatening anymore. And then, like I said, it's more about where do you put it, and what scale of that design is appropriate for that place. And then kind of this comes back to what you guys do, but some of the tactical stuff, let's show what a narrower street looks like, or let's show what a little, community, little pocket micro park would look like on a vacant lot. And again, most of the time, sure, there are people that are going to kind of piss and moan about a little bit. Sure. But most people like it.
Right.
Yeah. Just got to put it in front of them.
Yeah. And I think, the temporary stuff is like, it's temporary. So let's try it and let's see what works. Let's see what doesn't. There's probably a version of it that does work everywhere. It's just, what does it look like for your community?
Yep. So, okay, Ryan. So we went, I asked you a few questions about the engagement side. You kind of pivoted and got into some of the work we're doing, but really the theme of this, I think the takeaway for our listeners here is it's really important to have that community identity that can be kind of a tiered a tiered one like we talked about that has the overarching, what's our community about? And then you can drill down and say, what does that mean into the land use and the growth management strategy? Or what does that mean for downtown? What does that mean for economic development? And having that ongoing narrative in the community about what matters and who's moving in and who's moving out and how does that change the values of the community, if at all. That's just, it's so important to getting through, you know, like what you asked about the elected officials swapping out. It's so important for internal city culture, but also for the community and residents. And I think you guys are doing some leading edge work in that regard. And I think, you know, we're partnered up on a couple projects now, and we'll have some more opportunities to do in the future. But you have any kind of any last thoughts or one last thought or recommendation or anything you want to throw out that we didn't get to that you want cities to know about?
It was a great conversation, and yeah, we're excited to work with you guys because we've been big fans of everything that you guys are about and talk about. And I mean, I think you're right. I think at the end of the day, it's both really simple yet really hard, right? It's it's really obvious things that communities need to do: engagement, be fiscally sound, have an identity that's beyond one person. Those are very simple things, but they're hard to do because of you have to do it. You know, the analogy I always comes to my mind is like, it's like diet and exercise. Like, we always look for the fad diet or the thing that's going to, we all know it. Well, what it is. You got to eat better and exercise, like, you know, but we want the shortcut. So it's simple, but it's hard. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we're just, you know, I think both of us are at points in our career where we're not really interested in kind of just doing the work to do the work. We want to do work that matters. And that's why we're working with firms like you guys and working with communities that care about that. And so in one hand, that makes that kind of easy because the cities that typically hire us, they do care about these things and they want to make some change. So that makes it a lot better than trying to sell them on it after the fact. So.
Awesome. Well, hey, Ryan, I appreciate you being on. We'll get all your contact info in the show notes and drop that in. And then we'll get this shared out with folks. And if you ever have questions about how to do engagement in communities the right way, I think Ryan's a great resource for you. So thanks again for being on, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
Okay, so that was a lot of fun to do. These always are for me, but you know, Ryan and I, like I said, we've known each other a long time. We're doing a little bit of work together, but we've talked about this idea of getting on a podcast together for a while, and it was just nice to kind of finally hear his answers to some of the questions I've had for him, and you know, and vice versa. I really liked at the end how things came together. At the end of the conversation about how cities really need to establish a strong vision and culture, and then utilize their engagement efforts and planning work to align people and basically just get more of that cohesive spirit of collaboration in our communities. Right, our cities are facing so many challenges today, whether that's infrastructure funding, whether that's affordable housing, whether that's mobility and how people get around. There's so many different needs and so many different interests. So it's just hard to get all of those people aligned around one way of doing things or even a few ways of doing things. And ongoing engagement and education is just so important. It's like that glue that can help provide that baseline so that you're not getting people's input just on that one project here or there, but it's more of an ongoing dialogue in the community about what's important. And you find those additional people to connect and work together. You know, if you haven't listened to the last episode that I recorded with Mike Keene and Monty Anderson about South Bend, Indiana, that's a great example of people working together towards common goals. A lot of times there's resources and communities that can contribute to these challenges, and the city needs to play that role of aligning and organizing them towards, in an intentional way. And the unified brand, the different, you know, a coordinated engagement program can help you do that. At the same time, man, with all these challenges coming, If you don't have that strong identity, if you don't have that common language, if you don't have that system of communicating, both listening to your community, but also educating and informing them on what's going on. If you don't have that in place, the challenges that are coming are just going to strain your resources and push those divides even harder. Get to work on that. wherever you are, if you have it, make it better. If you don't have it, get started. If you want some help with that, whether it's just on the branding side, if it's on the engagement side, our team, Verdunity, Civic Brand, both of us, I know, on behalf of Ryan, I know we'd love to talk with you. We'd be happy to help out and serve in any way that we can. But, we do share this philosophy of we need to build great places for everyone, and there's gaps in that right now. So we'd love to help you out if you're interested. Verdunity, you can go to verdunity.com, reach out to us at podcast@verdunity.com. We've got Ryan's information in the show notes. You can learn more about them at civicbrand.com. And if you're not already listening to Eyes on the Street, Ryan's podcast, go check that one out. Add it to your feed. Ryan's got some good conversations as well. So that's it. That does it for this episode. Thanks again, you guys, for listening. We really appreciate every one of you that subscribes, downloads, listens, shares, gives us feedback. What do you like? What do you don't like? And we take that feedback and try to make it better. But this podcast has been such a critical part of just getting these ideas out there to more people. About the need, the importance of making our places stronger fiscally, environmentally, and more inclusive. So if you enjoy this podcast, please share it with others. Take a minute to rate it in your favorite platform, whether that's Apple, Google, wherever. You can also email comments and suggestions anytime to us at podcast@verdunity.com. And I see those, AJ, Marshall, Madi, our whole team that works on the podcast and our marketing efforts will see that. So give us your feedback when you can. And again, really appreciate you guys that listen, and hope you continue to see, get value out of these conversations. So take care and go cultivate something good in your neighborhood. See you next time. Bye.